Well, many poets talk about music or jazz as being akin mm-hmm. to poetry. It seems to me, in terms of expressing emotion, maybe it's easier in music or painting than it is in words.
Well, music is perhaps the most purely emotional art in that it doesn't have to quote unquote articulate anything, mm-hmm. and painting creates the image, and those are two arts that I feel are tucked inside poetry. When we talk about the vision of the poet, we can liken that to painting. I mean, that's where we get ideas of word painting, that the poem is a painting in words. The music of the poem is, well, there are two musics in the poem. There's the music of the line, which I think of as like a bass line. I mean, if we're still in the jazz mode. Yep. So there's that bass line going. And then there's the music of the sentence. Quite separate. It's prose music. And people who only pay attention to the music of the sentence get accused of writing chopped up prose. But there's this distinct sentence music that unfolds over the lines. And those rhythms are pure emotional states. And sometimes as poets, we're not even aware of what those emotional states really are. And the imagery, when we talk about the vision of a poet, I think actually we're talking about a poet's imagery. You know, when we say Wallace Stevens imagery or William Carlos Williams imagery or when we say Wallace Stevens vision or William Carlos Williams's vision or Elizabeth Bishop's vision or Sonia Sanchez's vision, I think we're largely talking about what they envision mm-hmm. and their imagery.
You know, you're known as a new formalist.
Yes.
And how does Why do you laugh at that?
Yes, well, at this point, I feel a little bit like an old formalist. But, yes.
No. Well, how does formalism enter into it through your writing for you in terms of the vision, the imagery, and all that?
I'm a psychological formalist. How's that? And my interest in formal poetry began because I had very kind of too hot to handle subject matter. I was in psychological states that were just flooding me with feeling and language, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't want to write. I didn't want to vomit something out on a page. And because I didn't want to do that, yet I wanted to write deeply personally. I was not interested, I've become more interested in abstraction, but I wasn't interested in abstraction at all when I started off writing. I just was too consumed by feeling. So that's what drew me to formal boundaries, because I thought if I knew how to do that, then I could infuse that with what I was feeling and thinking, and I would be making art at the same time. I wanted to make art, and for me, a formal poem is an art object, just because of the level of precision. And when I see a sculpture, a brass sculpture that I know is highly polished, or a sanded wood sculpture that I know someone sanded again and again and again, hundreds of times returning to it, to get that surface, That's the kind of art object that I'm talking about. And I should tell you that my sensibility is extremely visual. I mean, as you've probably figured out by my analogies, I mean, I'm starting off with a paint chip, for crying out loud. And I, as a child, I drew and painted. But words, I suppose, the articulation of something seemed more important to me. But I've always had this lust for the visual, and my thinking tends toward the image and tends toward the visual. Another aspect of formal poetry that drew me to it is that it ensured a kind of musicality, and I wanted that in there. And it also had to do with class. I'm a working class girl from Buffalo, New York. I'm the first person in my family to go to college. I wanted to write quote-unquote real poetry, and someone from a more sophisticated background would have understood that they could have broken all kinds of boundaries in poetry. But I wanted to be certified as a real poet, and to me that meant the poets that you read in school. Where else did I read them? They certainly weren't at home. No one was talking about them. So that meant Keats, John Donne. It's bizarre to call Keats a formalist. You know, I mean, he did what he did. He was a poet. But I thought I needed to be able to do that. Then I'd be real. And then if I wanted to throw it all away, of course I'd be. At that point, grand and sophisticated and educated, and I could throw it all away. But I felt like I had to learn it first.
Is that kind of like an artist learning the classical style?
Yeah,
perspective?
Absolutely.
And then they can go to abstract.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's just like, you know, studying figuration. Oh, all that sort of Renaissance gray underpainting before they put the color on and stuff like that. We're always connecting with the past. And one of the ways you connect with the past is through technique. And this is also psychological for me as well. You cannot choose your family. You're given your family. But as you become an artist, specifically a poet, you choose your poetic family. Mm-hmm. And you get to make it. Discover your literary aunts and uncles and the people you're related to, and it's a very disparate family, and the older you get, the larger the family becomes, and the more you read and the more poets you encounter from around the world, and or poets you re-encounter and discover they were part of your family after all. The interconnectedness of it all is part of what draws me to formal technique.
Would it be fair to say also that you find you can better communicate that flood of emotion through more formal imagery than another way?
Well, it's not exactly that the imagery is formal. It's that the rhythms of the language and the sound system is formal. That's really what it is. And then the imagery can be bizarre. I have a poem called Anger Sweetened, in which there's a bizarre image of a candified grasshopper. Like chocolate ants or something like this, only this is a grasshopper dripping with sweet. It's a terrifying image, and it came into my head, and I thought, ugh, this horrifies me, but it horrified me so much that I had to go for it. And I realized that it was an image of holding back your anger and kind of candifying your words. And so I ended up writing a sonnet about that called Anger Sweetened. And that's an example. I mean, the image is bizarre. It's not a quote-unquote formal image. It's almost like a film image or something.
Is what you're then trying to get at is a deeper communication than we normally would have, you know, in a social setting or...
Yeah, I'm not... But let's see. I'm interested in the surfaces of things, but I'm not interested in the superficial.
Ah, what's the distinction?
And I'm and by surfaces, I might mean I'm interested in, how can I say, the textures of life, the glass texture or the texture of fabric, and that's social fabric as well, but. I'm not so interested in being, there's a wonderful kind of art that comes from a chattiness and that makes an art of superficiality that I adore, but it's not me. Even though I'm a hearty laugher and my poems can be quite funny, at root, they're about some bell that resounds deep inside me that's serious.